Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As promised, Donald Trump is off to the races. The new president has not wasted time undoing Biden's legacy and moving ahead with such issues as immigration. He has a mandate to govern. Can he keep his diverse base behind him? And will the ruling elite submit? Crosstalking Trump, I'm joined by my guest, Patrick Henningsen in Plymouth. He is editor and founder of the 21st Century Wire. In Norton, we have Kyle Anzalone. He is an opinion editor at antiwar.com, as well as co-host of Conflicts of Interest. And in Los Angeles, we cross Ron Placone. He is a comedian and filmmaker whose movie, Left at Wall, comes out January 24th across multiple platforms. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to Patrick first in Plymouth. He wasn't supposed to be elected in 2016. He wasn't supposed to be elected in 2024. But here we are, okay? And we have the vantage point that he was 45th and now he's 47th. But I still really don't have a clear idea what he wants to do because, as I mentioned in my introduction, he has a very diverse base. MAGA is whatever you want it to mean. And I think a lot of people voted that way. So give me a checklist of the first few days of his administration. He's been signing his name a lot. Go ahead, Patrick.
Sure, Peter. Yeah, I mean, the first thing is this: the Trump governing in 2025 is very different than the Trump that would have been governing in 2021. And so we can see with all of that time with the controversy of the last election and him being kind of there in opposition, trolling the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, the Biden White House, and coming in really with a vengeance, with an agenda and with something to prove in a way that I think and also with a little bit of escape velocity from the hold that they had upon him in 2020 with all of the different impeachment scandals and so forth. He's had time to break free of that, and he's unleashed himself on this. And the executive orders, he's shown he's coming good on major campaign promises. January 6th, amnesty for all of the J6ers, hitting back at big tech censorship, government censorship as well, a whole range of executive orders that I think are DEI, the anti-woke agenda is basically dead. Affirmative action is dead. Now, there's going to be a lot of legal challenges with birthright citizenship, death penalty for illegal. So a lot of this is going to get tied up in the courts in the next couple of years. But on the main stuff, I think he's come out pretty hard and strong. And so he's made a statement. Now the real business of governing begins. And this is the tricky part. And so we'll see how it plays out.
Yep, the real business of governing. I'm glad you put it that way. Kyle, Patrick used the word unleashed himself, okay? But a lot of those things that Patrick mentioned, not all of them, but a lot of them are cultural. It's a cultural shift. We've seen that, and we've seen the public receptive to that. I mean, Donald Trump has higher ratings now than he's ever had in public running as a politician or in office. How long that will last, I don't know. I don't think it's going to last for long. But Kyle, all of us on this program, we talk a lot about foreign policy. Patrick's right. He's signed his name on a lot of executive orders. But as far as foreign policy concerned, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't expect too much in the first week, but he's kind of wobbly, I would say, particularly when it comes to Ukraine, one of his signature issues while running for re-election.
Yeah, I think there's some good news and some bad news here. I think if you want to look at the positive, he took the 51 signatories of the Hunter Biden laptop letter, which was, of course, used to, you know, have a lot of censorship on that New York Post story just before the 2020 election. And in that executive order, Trump specifically says this is because the intelligence community interfered in the 2020 election. And so Trump in 2016 never seemed to really understand and was never really able to articulate what the intelligence community did to him with the Russiagate saga. He was just wrapped up in it. And of course, it didn't have to be a libertarian like myself that he could have used Aaron Maté, Michael Tracy, Matt Taibbi to explain this to the American people. And he was just never able to do so. And so I think this executive order is a pretty good sign. Also, removing the security clearance and the security detail from John Bolton, another good sign. And then he also fired Brian Hook from the Wilson Center, which was a good sign. However, he also put Brian Hook in charge of staffing his State Department. And so now we have Marco Rubio as the Secretary of State. And so, you know, with Trump, it's always going to be a mixed bag, I think. Him identifying who his enemies are is a good thing, because those are our enemies as well. Like, the intelligence community is the true enemy of the American people. Even if Trump is going after them for his own personal reasons, it's still a good thing for us. The problem is does he really understand how deep this goes? And when he has Marco Rubio and the likes of those people around him, you would think he probably doesn't.
Yeah, Ron, I mean, it's we're in the situation, is the glass half full or half empty? I think Kyle has got it spot on here. Because, you know, for all the differences, and my goodness, we're all different from Joe Biden, okay? That's not hard, okay? But, I mean, you know, coming back down to earth here, is there really a significant difference, okay? The Dems have their billionaires. Apparently now the Republicans have their billionaires. I think the left's charge that Trump is too close to the billionaire. Well, that's ridiculous, okay? And I said earlier in reaction to Patrick, a cultural shift. But is there a power shift, Ron?
I would say no, there is not a power shift. I mean, you look at what Trump has done so far, who he is surrounding himself with, and I just think a lot of these kind of claims for the positive are just a lot of smoke and mirrors. They say, oh, Trump's going to rein in big tech. Really? Is he? Let's look at his inauguration. He was surrounded by Mark Zuckerberg. He was surrounded by Elon Musk. He was surrounded by the CEO of TikTok, which, by the way, that was a huge gift to Donald Trump by Democrats and Republicans. That whole TikTok ban issue was just absolute xenophobic nonsense. And then they gave the gift to Trump because he got to look like the good guy by saving it. What a lot of people don't realize is that piece of policy gave Trump, or whoever's president, the ability to just ban any foreign app that they don't like. So he kind of has this newfound power. So because of that, he has big tech kissing up to them. So he's not going to rein any of that in. On foreign policy, a lot of it is just more of the same and already has been. On a lot of these executive orders, he's going to have a lot of messes ahead of him, in particular with some of these tariff ideas. I don't think anyone really thought that through. He's antagonizing Canada. We get a lot of energy from Canada. We also get a lot of our lumber from Canada. And now you're going to have a lot of Canadian stores that aren't going to have any American products on their shelves. This is going to make a lot of big businesses in the United States pretty mad, especially some beer companies. So he hasn't thought any of this through. A lot of the stuff he inherited foreign policy wise, of course, you can't just point your finger at him. He's only been president for a day or so. A lot of that is the horrific legacy of Joe Biden. But to get to the central question, is there really much of a change here? Not really. And that's kind of what you get when both teams, both political teams, have the same Wall Street sponsors.
Yeah, well, Patrick, you know, if it's more of the same, that might explain the whole thing with Greenland and Canada and Panama. I mean, you know, it's the empire eating itself, as it were, okay? I mean, these are not adversaries, okay? But I think it plays well to the base, I suppose. I mean, Trump did invoke President McKinley of all presidents during his inaugural, the greatest imperialist of American history. I mean, I don't know if the public understood that, but I mean, is this kind of, you know, bait for the base, Patrick?
It's very interesting, you know, take those two issues, Greenland and the Panama Canal. Well, both of those issues are tied to China and Russia geopolitically. Yep. Talking about the Arctic Passage, the northern trade route, that's basically Greenland positioning itself for, you know, the United States position there is completely essential to maintaining dominance over this new geopolitical choke point. And then down at the Panama Canal, there's a whole bunch of projects, including the Nicaragua Lake and canal, and then Mexico's doing a transit corridor as well that's going to have huge commercial facilities on both ends. So you're talking about potential industrial corridor to rival anything in North America that could come online in Mexico, China being running point with Mexico and other countries on that. So these are real geopolitical, big agenda items. So this is actually, I think, one of the more pragmatic and realist.
Yeah, okay, but real. I'm glad. Well, you took the word right from me. But Kyle, so we went from this kind of liberal order of Blinken, you know, defending hegemony. Well, we're going to have realism defending hegemony. I mean, it's still hegemony, but Kyle.
Yeah, well, I think realism is the best we could hope for, and is far gone more like a neoconservative imperialist agenda in the Trump administration versus a realist agenda. I know there's been some good appointments, but looking overall, top down, you got Marco Rubio and people like that. I think the foreign policy is largely going to remain the same. The difference is going to be rhetorical. You know, does Trump... how much does he support Israel? How happy is he about supporting Israel? It's not going to change from Trump versus Biden. I think maybe the Greenland thing is a good example of Trump's outlook being different than Biden's, where you know, the international world order says you can't change borders, but Trump sees a changing world. He sees Greenland being up north, having territory in the Arctic Circle, and understands that as the, you know, ice cap melts, if it melts, then that's going to create, you know, new negotiations over trade routes. And having more land in the Arctic Circle means that the U.S. gets more leverage up there. Also, if you start looking at the globe, you know, from the north pointed down, you see how close Russia is to Greenland and things like that. And so I think that's kind of Trump's viewpoint there.
Yeah, well,
where
I mean,
Biden would probably try more soft power to build military bases there.
What about a compromise? Just negotiations instead of taking it over. Gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the new Trump administration. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the new Trump presidency. Okay, let's go back to Ron in Los Angeles. You know, Ron, one of the, at least in my mind, the most important legacy of Biden is the genocide in Gaza. That's what his administration will go down in history for. Now, on the program over the last few months, I've raised the specter of having the stench of genocide on your legacy. And Trump doesn't want that. That's been my position here. People have disagreed with me and said Trump doesn't care one way or another. That remains to be seen here. But that ceasefire deal is quite interesting. There are a lot of different versions of how it came about. The official line I always reject out of hand until I have more information. But, I mean, it seems that Trump is aware of that. You can continue throwing people off their land. You can continue the genocide. Just don't have it so public. And Trump even mentioned that during the campaign. I don't think he has any loyalty to Netanyahu at all. He sees Israel as an ally. Of course, he's everyone to the person as a Zionist is in his administration here. But I think he's sensitive to that, and he will act accordingly. Go ahead, Ron.
I agree with what you said about, you know, Joe Biden's legacy being the genocide in Gaza. I agree with that 100%, 110%. The Biden administration was putrid on that. I do not share your optimism about Donald Trump. I think when it comes to foreign policy, and he proved this in his first term, Donald Trump is just all about whoever he surrounds himself with. And as usual, he's surrounding himself with the same warmongers. He campaigned as a peace president the first time in 2016, and he ended up dropping a lot of bombs in his first term. The ceasefire situation was very interesting because you saw both Joe Biden and Donald Trump try to take credit for it, even though neither one of them actually supported it. Since then, the ceasefire has been violated multiple times. You can't pin all that on Trump. Again, that falls on the Biden administration, too. Donald Trump's only been president for a few days, but the ceasefire has been violated multiple times nonetheless. Also, the Trump administration has lifted sanctions as far as Israel settlers go, and that led to a new attack recently. And his new security advisor even hinted that they're definitely going to keep supplying Israel with weapons. They're not going to halt anything there. So I don't think Trump really cares either way. I don't think there's any optimism that he will be any different from the Biden administration when it comes to foreign policy and the genocide in Gaza. I sincerely hope I'm wrong there. I want to see peace. I don't care how it comes about. I just want to see peace. I don't care who gets credit for it. I just want it to happen. I kind of just see more of the same. And by the way, I'll point this out since we're on the topic. I think it's very interesting that on this panel, we have four different political perspectives here. I mean, I'm a socialist, but the one thing we seem to all pretty much agree on for the most part is that foreign policy is more of the same, really speaks to the American empire.
Yeah, Patrick, I agree with that 100%. If something before we when we convene here is that, you know, we have different points of view, but we have a lot of commonalities, except for I haven't had a Democrat on this program for maybe 4 years. And that was an unpleasant experience. Patrick, take it away.
I'm a former Democrat.
So am I.
If that counts for anything. It is kind of interesting. I mean, I'm looking at the two theaters, the Middle East and Ukraine, and coming in there, you know, a lot more dovish. Marco Rubio sounding like a peacenik when he's talking about the situation in Ukraine with Russia. But that can change very quickly, Peter, because I think the expectation of where America thinks they're going to be at the negotiation table with Russia is very different than where Moscow is. And you could have a situation where if the deep state, if the various elements of the permanent state and the establishment are able to kind of maneuver around Trump to create a situation where he will be forced to become hawkish, at least in the interim, and maybe hit the status quo resume on Ukraine, and maybe even start sanctioning. This is another thing that he could do. He can go for secondary sanctions against allied nations like India in a way that previous presidents couldn't. So that's a place where he could be more aggressive and actually get results if it's going to be playing hardball with Moscow. Because there's the one thing, Peter, no one's saying when are the elections in Kiev. And because you're not hearing that, that's Russia's main proviso. They want to see elections before they have serious negotiations. And if the U.S. aren't making noises about that, I'm getting quite suspicious that that's not on the priority list of Washington. Then what's next? A coup? Who knows? So I think this is going to be interesting with Ukraine
people. Well, as long as Zelensky is useful, he will be there. When he's not useful, he won't be there. Kyle, I'm sure you saw it. Trump did an impromptu Q&A with the media, which he loves to do. And he was asked about Ukraine. And, and looking at him as he's signing away, my first impression is he's not very well informed about it. Number two, he doesn't really have anything particular to say. And number three, I don't want to keep answering these questions every time the media confronts me. It's already beginning to wear on him. Kyle.
Well, first, let me say, I think this is my favorite part of Trump being president again. It's just you have these impromptu Q&As that don't feel like highly coordinated, highly scripted events. And you feel like you actually understand what the president is thinking at any given time. It may change. It may not be particularly articulate or well thought out, but at least you understand what the president is thinking. I think my real concern here is that with the conflict in Gaza, Trump could potentially end it kind of by shooting from the hip because the U.S. has so much leverage over Israel. And so it's not as complex to end because we could just threaten to withhold the weapon shipments and then Israel would have to comply. You know, Israeli generals have even said they could wage the war in Gaza for 1 or 2 months without U.S. support, but that's it. And now they're waging a war in the West Bank, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen. And so the idea that they could do this without U.S. support is completely ridiculous. Now, so maybe somebody shows Trump pictures of dead Palestinian children and he just has a moment and declares that no more aid to Israel unless they knock this off. I doubt that happens, but maybe that happens. He seems more interested in ending the war in Ukraine, but that's an incredibly complex knot to undo. I mean, a lot of these sanctions that are on Russia require congressional approval to take off. And so if we're going to end this conflict, Trump actually needs Congress to go along with it. Do you think, I mean, he has a 51 majority in the Senate. Do you think there's 1, 2, 3 Republican senators who won't vote to remove U.S. sanctions on Russia? And so I don't think Trump has, you know, the bureaucratic understanding to actually get a deal done with Ukraine. And I think that's really unfortunate. And the Biden administration did a lot in their Trump-proofing program to make sure that, I think for 6-9 months, Ukraine does have quite a stockpile of weapons that have been transferred to NATO countries that they're going to continue to dole out to Ukraine. And I think what they're hoping for is that they could get this long enough, 6-9 months, that now Trump feels like it's his war that he wants to win.
Oh, of course, his positions aren't good. It's already his war, everybody. It's already his war. I would just point out, everyone, that Trump was impeached for stopping arms to Ukraine. What do you think they're going to do to him if he does it to Israel? Ron, another important issue here. Trump ran on freedom of speech, and I liked what he had to say during the campaign. I also like seeing Zuckerberg cower in front of the administration for reasons that we would agree with. But what about the pro-Palestinian protests? And what about, you know, weaponizing the speech against dissent on that issue here? That remains to be seen. Pam Bondi, well, we're going to see what she's going to do. It's not all roses, gentlemen. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me when people make it out like Trump is some free speech warrior. I mean, yeah, he says some nice things, but then actions kind of say otherwise. I mean, he cracked down on protests incredibly hard. A lot of people like to forget that Trump actually put the country under martial law at some point. You also have, you know, again, the TikTok situation that I know came up last time. They're looking to kind of give that to an American company that will probably perform the same types of censorship that you see across social media. And let's be honest, one of the big reasons the TikTok thing came to the surface in the first place, the big reason was because a lot of Democrats and Republicans have money invested in domestic software and stuff like that. Yeah. Another big reason was a lot of young people were spreading messages about Palestinian rights, against the genocide, and the United States couldn't control the algorithm, and they didn't like that. So they're going to try to find a situation where they can control the algorithm. So again, you're kind of seeing more of the same. And you bring up Zuckerberg. I mean, this is a guy who I think just kind of kisses up to whoever's in the White House.
Yep.
When there was a Biden White House, he was all about, okay, we're going to censor the way the DNC tells us to, and then we're just going to feed people whatever their political bias is to keep them on Facebook. So you're either going to get a left-wing, I'm doing quotes, left-wing perspective or a right-wing perspective within the confines of what we allow. And look, for every QAnon article or whatever that they censored, they probably censored two or three pro-Palestine pieces and anti-war pieces. So, again, it's just more of the same there. I mean, every now and again, he'll have some interesting talking point, and then you find him doing the complete opposite. And this goes far beyond Donald Trump. I mean, and y'all mentioned how what if there's an incentive for him to be hawkish? There's going to be, just like there was the first time. They called him presidential when he dropped bombs on Syria. So then the bombs continued. We're going to see the same thing this time around. And that goes beyond any one administration. That goes beyond Trump. That goes beyond Biden. That goes beyond Obama. That goes beyond Bush. But you're seeing more and more of the same.
It's about the empire here. Patrick, so the Overton window is not going to be enlarged here. Last 30 seconds. Go to you, my friend.
I think in the short term, I think it is. But it's going to take the establishment. It's going to take the big tech world, the mainstream media, time to conform to this new reality. There's definitely a power shift that's taken place. Big tech, the digital oligarchies, right there, front row seat in the new administration. New establishment is taking shape right now. So we'll see how things react. But it's going to be incredibly interesting. There's a lot that's going to be in flux in this first 12 months.
Well, as I've said on this program, we're going to give the 100 days the 100 days, okay? And maybe I'll see all three of you again during that 100 days. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Plymouth, Los Angeles, and in Norton. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk news.